Okay, this evening we are going to be learning chapter 67. Now I brought a, there's a sign on the back that says, this painting is a well-known source of blessing. Well-known. Well, it's actually, it's the same as what you have here. Okay. I collect these. I have a few hundred of these pictures of these from around the world. And they all have the exact same thing in common. This one happens to come from my office. And I have a few of these in my home on ivory. There's a color copy of one of in my office. This is known as a Shivisi. Does it ring a bell? Didn't we have that in your house? A Shivisi. It comes from the word in chapter 16 of Tehillim. We did this a while back. Shivisi Hashem Negdi Tamin. Right? Shivisi Hashem the Negdi Tamin. It means I place God before me always.
Okay. Rabbi, did you mean to record this?
It is being recorded.
It doesn't look like it on my end.
It said when it first started, it said you're being recorded.
It's recording. I see the button.
Okay, please. Okay, so this thing here is known as a Shivisi, right? It's blown up. And the part of this, there's a lot to analyze this. We take up, they have courses analyzing what all this is. The part that we're going to analyze is this middle part right here, this menorah. Okay. Now, if you recall around Hanukkah time, we discussed this. Okay. You see that if you look up very close, right, there are three menorahs here, and we're going to analyze the middle one, right? And the menorah is made up of a psukim. You see it? Okay. Now, you have different symbols all around here, but this is very interesting. Is just one symbol I want to show you. Is you see on this one right here, there's a stepladder. You see it? There's a stepladder. There's a bowl, there's a pitcher, there's a scissors, and there's a stepladder. Okay. All right. So the purpose of the stepladder would appear that we call a ladder in Hebrew a sulam. Sulam is like in Yaakov's dream that the angels are going up the ladder to reach up to the heavens. So there's something about this number seven. There's something about this. This is a picture, just as much about Spiras HaOmer as it is about Hanukkah, right? Is that, you know, for us on Hanukkah, the menorah has nine strands, but that has to do with a miracle that took place in a story called the Hanukkah story that has nothing to do with the temple menorah. Temple menorah has seven strands, not nine. Right? So what I want to do is analyze chapter 67 of Tehillim, which is what all these hundreds of pictures that I've taken around the world, what they all have in common is that the menorahs are made up of this 67th psalm. Now, what I want to do is read the psalm together. It's here in your menorah, so and figure out what does this have to do with either Hanukkah or Sfiras HaOmer, right? So let's turn to the to the right hand at the top, and you can start to read the Hebrew together. Okay? Or if you wish to, you can read it from this, from the Shivisi. It's here. It's at the top. You see it? Read it across. So just go good. Now, the letters do not stop with the words. It's only three letters per menorah, per strand. La minatseach benegin nos mizmor shir. Sort of the introduction. I just read across with three, right? 3-3-3-2-3-3-3, right? La menatzeach b'neginos mizmoshir, right? That means to the conductor, let's sing a song together, right? And this is the song. Let's go down the menorah from the left to the right. Okay. Lam natseach b'neginos mizmoshir. Now you see the word shir at the top left? Just go down the line. Elokim yichaneinu vivorcheinu ya'er panav itanu sela. Okay. Elokim yichaneinu vivorcheinu ya'er panav itanu sela. What does this sound like? Elokim. Yes, beautiful. That was great. All right. Yivarechacha Hashem v'yishmerecha yireshem panav adacha v'chuneka. It has all the trappings of Birchas Kohanim in this. Okay. Now, Birchas Kohanim is a short little blessing, three short quick blessings, right? And it has different parts to it. It says, Yivarechacha Hashem v'yishmerecha. May God bless you and keep you. So Rashi says that is a blessing of material well-being. May God bless your property, your money, your earnings, your wages, and v'yishmerecha. He has to keep you because other people might want it. You know, it's given, you know, people don't steal other people's spirituality. They steal their material wealth, right? You know, people who are interested in my spiritual wealth aren't going to steal it. You know, but the people, there are people out there who might be interested in stealing your material wealth. So God, please guard that for me. Next. Ya'er Hashem panav elecha v'chuneka, which really sounds like what's going on here in this blessing. Ya'er Hashem, may God shine his light upon you, right? And shine his grace upon you. That's spiritual wealth, right? So the blessing that the Kohanim give us is, which is an appropriate blessing. You've got kids at home, you've got to feed them, you've got to give them an education, you've got to buy them clothing, you've got to place them to live. We need material benefits. In fact, the Rambam said, I'm not sure whether the original source of this, but it is tikkun haguf kodim tikkun hanefesh. You have to take care of your body before you can take care of your soul. Right? A soul will not thrive in a body racked in pain, right? So this sounds like what we just read down the left side of the menorah sounds like the second bracha of Birchas Kohanim, right? And even a little bit of the first, right? But Ya'er Hashem panav elecha v'chuneka. You see, really, it's plugging into the fact that it's our recognition and our realization, our admission that life's blessings are coming from you, God. So we beg of you to keep it up. Now, next one says, Lo da'as ba'aretz darkecha b'chol goyim yeshua secha. We would like this to be so that everyone in the land should know your ways, and even the nations of the world should know of your salvation. We have done a good job, the Jewish people have, in teaching the majority of the world a godly kind of aspiration. Right? 2,500, 3,000 years ago, you were either Jewish or you were pagan. Right? So now there are, you know, Christianity, Islam, and even maybe some of the natures of the Eastern religions seek out a higher spirit, a higher being. And for most people, it's a monotheistic ideal. Right? Okay. So that's what the second pasuk is, right? And now we say, Yoducha Amim Elokim, Yoducha Amim Kulam. Does everyone see what we're doing? Let the nations and, right? Yoducha Amim Elokim, Yoducha Amim Kulam. Let them all recognize you, God. All of them. Right? Let the nations admit, show an admission towards your greatness. Let all of them admit. Okay, now here is the middle pasuk. You see where it goes down the middle?
Mm-hmm.
This is what makes the actual middle of the menorah. You can read it straight down, Yismachu Viranana. You see it? And you see it on in this picture also. Yismachu Viranana Lilumim, Yisishbota Mim Mishon. You see it? Okay. At this point, do you see a Sfira Sa'omer message emerge, or do you see a Hanukkah message, particularly Hanukkah message emerge more than any other holiday? I mean, I could force, you know, I can, you know, fabricate anything, I guess, but what's the message? You know, what's the connection to Hanukkah? Well, the connection to the menorah is that this pasuk has seven verses, and each verse gets into the menorah. Right? Very nice. All right, but there's something more that connects really to Sfiras HaOmer, is this pasuk also has 49 words in it. This chapter has 49 words in it. Seven verses and 49 words. That may not be thematically connected to Sfiras HaOmer, but it certainly is numerically connected to Sfiras HaOmer. It's structurally connected to Sfiras HaOmer. And then when you add to that, that the middle verse, Yismachu v'irananu le'umim, Yisishpot amim mishor le'umim ba'aretz tanchem sela. You want to count the words there? Yismachu is 5, v'irananu is 11, le'umim is 16. Don't bother going the whole way. How many words, how many letters do you think are in this middle verse? Yeah. This is just too coincidental. This is too coincidental. A chapter in Tehillim that has 7 verses, 49 words, and the middle verse, the one that makes up for the middle strand, has 49 letters in it? That is just blow me down. That's too much of a coincidence. Right? So, but herein lies a problem. Do you see on the menorah, the one I gave you here, you see the word tishpot? And you see the word Mishor? You see them?
Mm-hmm.
How many letters are in each one of those words?
5.
5, right? Each one is 5. Now look at the Shivisi behind this. It says, Yismechu b'rananu le'umim, Yisishpot amim Mishor. Count the words in those, the letters in those two words there. You see it? Ki tishpot. The word tishpot is a little hard to read, but how many letters are there?
Four.
Yes, it's missing the vav. How about Mishor? Mishor is also 4, right? Right
here.
1, 2, 3, 4. Now, in order to get to the number 49, you need both those vavs.
Which is in
Tehillim. It's not in Tehillim. Tehillim does not have those vavs in it. I have it's 47. Yeah. So why did this picture here put in the vavs? Because to make it fit the menorah, you know, the strand of 49 and 7s. But the Masorah, the actual words in Tehillim, missing the vavs. What it makes for an interesting thing is that this chapter of Tehillim, chapter 67, is a very common chapter of Tehillim in the liturgy.
Oh yeah.
You know, in our shul we sing this on Saturday night, right before Maariv, right? You know, you ever hear it? Yismachu v'irananu le'umim, ki yisishpot amim mishor, ulomim baretz tanchem sela yoducha amim elokim, yoducha amim kulam, eretz nosnayim. And it's a German minhag to sing this right before Shabbos ends. It's also found in Sfiras in Kiddush Levana. We bless the moon once a month. This is the Neder. Since Sfiras HaOmer, we say this after counting the Omer. So what's interesting is that in the same Siddur, plus Siddurim often have Sefer Tehillim in it. So for instance, the Art Scroll Siddur has this chapter four times in it. Right? In the Sefer Tehillim, the Vav's are missing. In Kiddush Levana, the Vav's are missing. In Motzei Shabbos, like you sing before starting Baruch Hu, the Vav's are missing. But in Sfiras HaOmer, the Vav's are there. You open up a Siddur and look inside. It's uncanny. Because somehow in Sfiras HaOmer, they want to put the Vav's to get to number 49. But in the same Siddur, it's, you know, you can't fool around this way, either there or not. So what's in my pictures that I take all around the world, I have encountered very few that share a certain aspect of this beautiful picture here. Right? This someone made this for me. But this picture is I can't say it's unique because I did find this in one or two places. I found one in Netanya where one of them has the Vav, Mishor has the Vav, but Tishbot doesn't.
Oh, really?
So, I know. You missed the Mesorah on Mishor, yeah. And you missed the 49 by not putting it in both of them. So this was made by just a copyist who really didn't know what he was doing. Mm-hmm. It's a calligrapher that was putting this together just to make a picture and sell it. Right? It's very nicely done. It has pictures of the seven species in it. The wheat and the barley and the pomegranate and the figs and the olives and the grapes and the dates. But it's a profound mistake. It's one thing if you keep out both Vavs, so you're keeping to the Masoretic tradition of Sefer Tehillim. Putting in both Vavs, okay, you're keeping to the tradition of Sfiras HaOmer. But to put it in one and not put it in the other is like nishtahin, nishtaher. It's like, right? Okay, let's go back to the text. Yismachu b'rananu le'umim. Okay, the nations will rejoice because they'll see that everybody gets what they deserve. Right? Ki tishpot amim mishor, because you will judge everybody fairly. Mishor means yashar, means straight and narrow. Lumim ba'aretz tanchem sela. And you will judge all lumim is not just another word for nations. And you will judge them appropriately in the land. Nations will get what they deserve. It'll be and things will make sense. And people will like that. Right? We want an orderly world. And the world isn't extremely orderly today, but the fact is, it's a lot more orderly than it used to be. Right? Let me see that. I just saw it. It was, I think it appeared maybe in one of the Sunday, it was in the Wall Street Journal, one of the Sunday book sections. They had a diary from the time of Genghis Khan. And it was just incredible what people, the average person who was alive at that time, if you had a day where you somehow got enough food for your family to survive, and you weren't taken captive and sold as a slave by marauders, that's a good day. Like your average day, you have to go through these serious machinations in hiding. In order to avoid people would just walk up to others and say, okay, you're my slave now. And, you know, shackle them and take them and sell them someplace and that's your life. Right? So, you know, what do we want from life is say there. Expectation. When I cross the street and my light is green, I expect that people going perpendicular to my direction are not going to run me over. I'm going to stop at their light, right? I have expectations that if someone would cause me harm, that there is some kind of deterrence in doing so, that they're afraid that something will happen to them as a result. right? We're sort of eroding that a little bit, but I'm just saying is that's what the middle pasuk is talking about. God set up a world order where people can get have certain expectations and meet them. We're good at adapting, right? It's starting to get too hot, it's starting to get too cold, it's starting to get too, you know, all right, we're good at it. If I have to leave this place, I'll have to leave this place. But just give me some expectation. And let the nations of the world have the expectation that that's coming from you. Okay. All right. So that is what the middle pasuk is talking about. Now it goes back. Take a look. Now we're going to the right side of the menorah. Chad put this on the, on for everybody to have. I hope that everyone was able to get it. Okay, we repeat the third pasuk now, right? Pasuk 5 is the exact same repeat of pasuk 3. You sing again. Yodu ha'amim elokim, yodu ha'amim kulam. Right? So why would we do that? Why is verse 3 and verse 5 the exact same pasuk? So here is where I would like to take you for this. And now we'll see that it may be thematically connected to Sefiras HaOmer as well. And this will connect to, I think we're all here for the first shiur. Well, not all of you, but this will connect to what we did in the first shiur also. Okay, between Pesach and Shavuos. Is that the first three verses of chapter 67 of Tehillim are talking about acknowledging that God is the source of our spiritual sustenance. And then the last three pasukim, look at pasuk 6, Eretz nosno yivula, yivarchenu elokim elokeinu. Let the land give forth its full strength and produce everything we need. And God bless it so that it should be so. The reason why it says elokim elokeinu and not Hashem elokeinu is a programmatic point of Tehillim I've shared with you many times. Is that Tehillim has different sections that concentrates more or less on certain names of God. Mm-hmm. Chapter 1 through chapter 41 hardly mentions the name Elohim. It's almost 85% of the time that God is mentioned, it's Adonai, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. Right? And Elohim is very rarely used. And it flips the other way after chapter 41. So you get verses like Kizeh Elohim Elokeinu Hu Yinagenu almost today's Shir Shalyom. Or Yivorchenu Elohim Elokeinu. It should be Yivorchenu Hashem Elokeinu. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu. Not Elohim Elokeinu. Right? So this is the section of Tehillim that concentrates on Hashem's name is Elohim. This does not indicate separate authorship. Elohim is a manifestation of God's judgment, right? A human judge in the Torah is called an Elohim, right? Elohim does describe humans in the Torah. Hashem tells Moshe, you will be an Elohim to Paro. God was not telling Moshe he's going to be a God to Paro, right? So God as Elohim, right, we don't usually say that the full name of God. God is Elohim is someone who is quite judgmental. So he's saying, God, good, use your judgment, use me the sadin, and judge us and give us what we deserve, which is a good land. Take the yivul of the land, which is the produce of the land, and bless it because we need material sustenance as well. Have you ever heard of a Talmudic discourse that says, if you want to be rich, go to the north. If you want to be smart, go to the south. What? Now, it's in etymology. How do you say north in Hebrew? Safon. And how do you say treasure in Hebrew? Matzpunim. Matzpunim. Why is treasure called Matzpunim? Because you hide it. You put it up new. You put your treasures away. Right? So phone is away from everything, right? So Matzpunim is where, that's why, what do we call the part of the Seder where we hide the Avikoman? Where we pick up, you find the Avikoman. It's called Safun, right? So what does it mean if you want to be wealthy, go to the north? It means in the north is where treasures are. Why is south the place for wisdom? So here is, I think, this the secret of the menorah. Is in the Heichal, in the sanctuary. The menorah was in the south of the sanctuary, and the table with the breads was in the north.
Oh.
So the table with the bread represents wealth. It's the 12, these huge 12 breads that the Kohanim ate. And the menorah, which is olive oil and just light, represents the light of wisdom. So the wisdom was in the south where the menorah was, and the southern part of the menorah is the part that has the spiritual sustenance, while the material sustenance was in the northern part. So that's what the menorah represents, is that the menorah itself can access both of the sides, as this parak in Tehillim, which is always written out in as part of a menorah. Here, you know, you have it also in the middle one. So whenever you see a shivisi in someone's living room, or look for how this chapter in Tehillim fits the fullness of the menorah, and then it closes out after Eretz Nosna Yivula. We're praying for God to give up the yivul of the land, the produce of the land properly. We say Yivarchenu Elokim v'yiru oso kol afse aretz. It's one last call out to say, God, if this can be, if you can show that a material blessing together with a physical blessing, with a spiritual blessing, then this is the greatest shleimus, right? This is why I say you're Er Hashem Panav Elecha, but you're saying Lecha Shalom. Because if God gives us Yibrechacha Hashem Yishmerecha, He gives us the material blessing and He guards it. And then He gives us the spiritual blessing, you're Er Hashem Panav Elecha, as Sarah said before, the opening verse of this parak, harps of it. And if we can somehow combine these two blessings, That's the greatest shleimus. Because what often happens with people is that their material wealth drives them away from spiritual things. They become too engrossed in the materialism of it all, and that takes them away from the spiritual attainments that can come to them. And this way you have verses all over the Torah like Bishman Yishurun Bayivot. Israel became fat and they kicked back at God, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and or Varam Lubavecha Vashachach Devas Hashem. You lifted up your heart in arrogance, and then you forgot God, right? So that's what tends to happen to people is when the material wealth takes over, they lose their. Right? It was the impoverished Jews that stayed with Shmirah Shabbos. It's when the Jews became so wealthy that they, you know, their businesses were, made them forget about Shabbos, and then their children, whatever, they were lost. Right? And when the Jews were able to move out of the Lower East Side and they could move to the suburbs, so they asked questions, is it better to drive to Shul or is it better to not go to Shul? No, the answer to that question should have been, don't move to a neighborhood unless you zone for a Shul first. Right, those neighborhoods are now just like in like Ulit and places like that, where the original psak from the conservative movement in the early 50s was that better to drive to Shul. That spelled it wasn't a precipitous collapse, but it wasn't within a few years that Jews weren't driving to Shul; they were driving to the movies. Shabbos. Right? But what precipitated that? The wealth that allowed them to move out of the ghettos of the Lower East Side and then to move out to the suburbs where there weren't any shuls. Right? Wealth too often has been a reason for us to turn away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The last pasuk of Tehillim Perek Samach Zayin is Yivrochenu Elokim V'yirusu Kol Yevsaretz, is that God, give us the fortitude that this material wealth does not turn us away from you. So on Pesach, we are leaving the threat to life, the incarceration, the miseries that attained to us for all those years, and we were treated like animals for so long that we were in danger of behaving like animals, right? So the Torah directed us to move from the Pesach holiday to look towards Shavuos, which would be a law code that would prevent us from many of the pathologies that it has attached itself to newly freed people. We were spared from a lot of the pathologies that affected, let's say, after the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, and many other, where people cast off the shackles of slavery and very quickly were not able to manage shortly afterwards. We were, first of all, we were warned by God, vengeance is not yours. You stay in your houses all night until you leave in the morning. No one spent that night looting and marauding. And, right? In truth, vengeance was God's in the first form because of what they did to our boys and then threw them in the water. But so we were spared that ugly part of emancipations in history. Plus, God immediately gave us a law code to guide us so that we wouldn't be leaving from being slaves of Paro to being slaves of a different boss, namely our own inclinations and our own impulsive behavior. Right? And then God gave us even something more important, a project, which was to build the sanctuary, to build the Mishkan in the desert. Right? So with the anticipation that we'll get into our land soon, okay, but we spent a little detour from that in the desert. But these seven psukim, I would like to suggest to you, are very important for this time of year historically, for what our ancestors experienced in the few weeks between leaving Egypt and receiving the Torah. And it was a time of extreme volatility. Who knows what could be of these recently freed slaves and what they will turn into, right? To assume that people who have been treated like animals can so effortlessly move to being like human beings so quickly. So, as I said in the previous year, that we devolved quite quickly to be like animals again. Right? So when Moshe prayed for us for 80 days after making the golden calf, it came down just on the day that we celebrate Yom Kippur. Right? With the news that God forgave them. So we on the anniversary of that forgiveness, we always celebrate a celebration. Yom Kippur is not a sad day of the turning the corner on our own sins. Okay. So it makes sense that the way for human beings to atone for behaving like animals is to behave like angels. And so we it's true. Many of the simple human needs on Yom Kippur, to the best of our ability. Okay, so So this acknowledgement that I have spiritual needs and material needs, and that the spiritual needs take precedence, right? This is manifest in our daily custom of praying before we eat, right? This is not to say that if someone desperately needs to eat or he has to take vitamins or pills or something or some medications before davening, that person can't do so. But we should at least daven something. We should pray something. Moda'ani, or say a blessing or two or something before going about our business or eating. Because we all have it. It's crucial that we feel that there's a spiritual side to us. And that side should be the sort of the leader. That side should guide the other side. We should not be thinking with the parts of our body that desire things. Right now, it is true that when you're really starving and hungry, it's hard to think about anything but just solving that hunger. Right? And that Yom Kippur is actually has an aspect to it to get yourself to feel some of that. But to say, I know I want nothing more right now than to just drink something for the sake of my throat hurts. But I see there's 3 hours left in the fast and I know how to say no. That's essentially how we're better than animals. Because animals only act on impulse. And animals don't really know how to say no if their impulse tells them otherwise. And if you put food before a dog, it'll keep eating whatever you put before it until it throws up, and then it'll eat what it just threw up. Right? But ostensibly, we know how to say no. We can push away food that we would really like to eat. And the best impulse, and I know this very well personally, is that, who doesn't go through a period in life where you needed to lose some weight, right? So your doctor tells you need to lose weight. The doctor says you're very close to type 2 diabetes. Your doctor tells you, you're just one step away from it, right? And there's something maybe will scare us into finally getting down to it I'll admit that while I know that I shouldn't be eating this thing, it's not a wedding, it's free, I'm not paying for it, I'm starved, I haven't eaten all day. Right. If I don't eat it, someone else will. I don't know, whatever it is. If I'm at a restaurant and I got to pay good money for this steak, yeah, maybe I won't eat it. But if it's free, it's a big piece of steak. There's lamb chops all over the place. There's sushi. There's everything is all around. So it's free. I'm here anyway. So I might as well eat as much as I can. Right. Right. But there's one thing I remember from my earliest days because my whole household we were very serious about milchiks and fleishiks. I will take that Häagen-Dazs ice cream when my doctor says my cholesterol is sky high because I just have to have a little and it's so good. Right? And it's there and it's, yeah. Right? The thing is to have a plan. Don't have it there. When we inevitably get this midnight hunger or this late night hunger and you just have to have something, best thing to do is to have a plan and have some substitutes for the things that drive you crazy. So, but if your fleishiks, you just had a hamburger or 5 hours ago, you had a hamburger. I always keep very scrupulously from 5 years old, kept the 6 hours. So,
isn't
it Sephardi? Certain Ashkenazim, 6 hours. Also. Yeah. So I would never touch a scoop of Häagen-Dazs ice cream within 6 hours of eating meat. Because that sensitivity in me is very strong. That's the left side of the menorah here. Right? You know what I'm saying? So when it doesn't have to be the whole shebang. It could be just certain things where you get used to saying, no, I'm not doing that. As much as I want very badly. And that's what Taras Mishpacha, this new couple, they want to show their express their physical love for each other. But they don't, because the Torah says that this is not a time for that. Right? If you could do that with someone you love, then you'll have the moral constraint to show respect for everyone like that. Right? As opposed to some people who are out of control. They don't know how to control themselves. Torah wants us to be in control. And this menorah, the way this is set up with the material on the first three, I'm sorry, the spiritual on the first three, the material on the last three, with the middle pasuk 3 and 5 saying exactly the same thing, that the nations of the world, when they recognize this ability that we have, right? But never we weaken our inhibitions with substances. Wine can weaken the inhibition, right? Certainly, drugs and pills and weaken our inhibitions, right? Is that the inhibition, which is the best counteract to the urge? The inhibition is what we call the Yetzer Tov. The urge is the Yetzer Hara, right? Okay, so, and the shlemus of both of these is the beautiful memra Daf Samach in the Seches Brachas that says, that exhorts us, that convinces us, that wants us to know that we are able to serve Hashem with both the impulse for Yetzer Hara as well as the impulse for Yetzer Tov. We can serve Hashem with, if we have a streak of laziness, we can serve Hashem with laziness too. Everything has a place. So, when we bring a korban, a sin offering, what gets put on the altar is blood and fats of the animal. This is symbolic because the blood represents our enthusiasm. Blood's rushing. I really want to do God's will. Fat represents laziness, and the fat represents, slothfulness. I put them both on the Mizbeach because I can serve God. Let's say someone wants to appeal to me to, come and join us for some kind of a nefarious act or something. I said, okay, now I'm going to be lazy. No, maybe I shouldn't. We have to know ourselves. We have to. So this is just to say that between Pesach and Shavuos, when we left our slavery, now maybe it's because we're leaving the winds and the snows and the cold of winter. And now the summer months are approaching. It's really where we have to be on our guard, to be in control. I'll just close with this. This is a Zohar. Zohar is a mystical Torah. The Zohar says that there are 12 months of the year that were divided between the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Ra. Yetzer Tov represents the Torah part of us. The Yetzer Ra is the Satan, the Satan, the devil, whatever you want. Different people call it different things. So there are 6 months of moderation. Those are the months of fall and spring. The months of moderation are Nisan, Iyar, and Sivan, which we just started now, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, and Tishrei, Cheshvan, and Kislev. The months of extreme are Tammuz of Elul, real heat months, and Teves, Shvat, and Adar, the cold months. Right? The these extreme months that the Satan owns are all the months where all our terrible tragedies happen. All the fast days are in those months. Mm. Right? Or I should say most of them are, at least. And the Zohar says that here is the job that what the Satan wants to do is to convince us to be extreme what's the extreme? It's too hot outside. It's too cold outside. You make excuses when it's extreme weather. Mm-hmm. I can't do this. I know you want, I told you I would do it, but I can't. It's too hot out. I can't do it. It's going to sweat too much. But when, so So if the Satan takes away some of our months of moderation, it'll destroy the world. But if we grab the Satan's months and behave properly in the months that the Satan rules, summer and winter, then we'll save the world. Mm-hmm. And the Zohar says we already took back 2 months. We took back Elul in preparation of Rosh Hashanah. That's the month of our tshuva. And we took back Adar because of the Purim story. Adar v'nahafocha. We turned around Adar. But alas, the Satan still has Tammuz and Av, well, the tragedy, 3 weeks, the 9 days, Tammuz and Av, and he has Teves and Shvat. So we have to get back those 4 months. And a successful navigation of the Sefiras HaOmer, right, is what prepares us, that leads us into Sivan, which prepares us to be in the right frame of mind to take over Tammuz. Okay. So that I present to you, Chevra, is the menorah, the Shivisi, in Tehillim chapter 67. To review what we did this evening is to show that this chapter is not only numerically connected to Sefiras HaOmer, it may even be thematically connected to Sefiras HaOmer. Why is it put in menorahs? I'm not going to connect this to Hanukkah. I think that's too much of a stretch. But it's connected to the menorah because the menorah in the base of Mikdash has 7 strands. It's not really connected to Hanukkah. It's connected to anything that's 7. 7 is sort of a natural progression that leads to Shabbos. Right? Everything else but the week, but that number 7 is dependent on the sun or the moon giving us its time. Right? The day, the month, the year. But the week, it doesn't need any timepiece. Right? To tell me how 1 week, one Shabbos goes into the next. So that's that magical sort of that, I shouldn't say magical, it's a natural order of number 7. 8 then moves into supernatural. That's why the bris is on the day, 8th day, and that's why Hanukkah lasted 8 days, and things like Shmini Atzeres is for Klal Yisrael. But that's for another time. There are 2 chapters in Tehillim that begin on the Tzeichal HaShminis, which Chazal Darshan, said something, the things about the supernatural. Right? But we did those earlier in the year. Okay, next week we are going to go back to our regularly scheduled parts of Tehillim, which is chapter 19 and chapter 20. Mm-hmm. We're going to be doing 19 and 20. Those are part of our liturgies. 20 we say every day between Ashrei and Uvel Tzion. 19 we say on Shabbos. Right? It's the first Tehillim we say on Shabbos morning in Pesukei Dezimra that is special for Shabbos. Mm-hmm. And after Shiva Hashem Kidu Malaloi, then we say Lam Natzeach, that's chapter 19. So next week, please God, we'll do 19 and 20. And again, those are liturgical chapters. Okay. Have a great week, everybody. Mm-hmm.